We're going to try to figure out how to help you understand the playoffs. I'm not sure I'm quite there after a ridiculous game four in Boston, the Eastern Conference Finals. That series is tied up. That's where we'll start. We're going to have George Sedano on, Heat fan, and also working the Western Conference Finals, get a sense of this Golden State Warriors team, likely headed back to a finals, and, of course, some story time with guys that were on the road and life advice. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. Game four. Let's try to break this down. So, before we get into all the stats and the history and what this means, Boston tying it up 2-2 now in the Eastern Conference Finals in Miami. The first thing I was kind of looking at is like, okay, now that Rob Williams is back, how does that change things? How does it change things for Horford? But then Smart is out. Tyler Hero is also out for Miami. So there's just a lot of different things trying to figure this out. And these teams, it feels like last man up, especially here in the Eastern Conference. Okay, so the first play, I'm looking at how they're going to defend Bam, because we were wondering why Bam wasn't initiating more offense, why it wasn't more aggressive, run the offense through Bam a little bit more. They did that in game three. None of this should be surprising, but I always kind of like to see like little tone setters in the beginning of a game to see if something's different. And I thought that Al came all the way there running this right side two-man game thing, Lowry and Bam, and Horford came all the way out to meet Bam almost at the break. And then Lowry ran some action where you could think of Horford maybe helping off of Bam a little, because Bam's not going to hit that shot and hurt you from out there, but he didn't. He just stayed with him and kind of let Lowry do his own thing. And there was no like shading towards him. There was another play a few possessions later where PJ was coming through the lane, a little bit of a floater, and Horford had Bam to the baseline boxed out, but he never came up to help and contest. Part of that is knowing you have Rob, but I also feel like it was this part of the plan of just staying as attached to Bam as you can the entire time. So it's like, look, don't even help on drives, because if you do, then it's a lob back to him. So just stay with him. Let him know that you're there the entire time. So that was a small part of it. It's not the entire story of the game, which we'll get to. Another small thing that I really liked that Boston did, they had a two-man game that they were trying to run with Butler getting a switch into Pritchard, which we've seen multiple times in this series. It was on the left side, two-man. And what happened here, and I love when teams do this, is they switch into a bad matchup, but they have somebody else kind of cheating towards the bad switch, going, let's switch it again. Sometimes they'll do this before in a different way, but they did it after the fact. And it's hard for Pritchard, because then you have to run back to whoever was originally assigned to the guy that was helping you. In this case, I believe it was Grant Williams with PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker's all the way in the right corner, so Pritchard has to get back. But the way Grant just let PJ go to the other side of the basketball court, stayed kind of at the paint, and then was like, all right, you got switched Butler into Pritchard, but I'm kind of here. And everybody has to be on the same page. This is not easy, because it's very easy. It's easy, but it's also even easier to screw it up. It's probably the best way to describe this. And so Pritchard runs back over the corner. Van Gundy's going nuts, being like, hey, you know, they're doing some of this stuff. So, all right. The real story is it was 18-1, and Miami missed their first 14 shots, which is the worst start for a team shooting-wise in a playoff game in 25 years. So I don't know what the hell is going on in the playoffs. I wish I had a better explanation. I know some people think it's fatigue, three-point variance, which, you know, look, I don't think it's that bad. Game three, as Bill and I discussed, you know, that was about effort. It was also about turnovers, where some of the turnovers because of effort and some of the turnovers were just Boston giving the ball away. a ton. And even Boston got it back still to a one-point game, despite how absurd that was. And Butler not playing the second half allows you to make that run and kind of get back into it. That never happened. There was some nice Oladipo stuff, which is like the only positive that you would take from this with the Miami Heat. Because historically, when you make your first shot at 321 of the first quarter, that means you're going to rank somewhere. So let's go over some of these numbers that I was looking at here. We'll give credit to some of this stuff. So it was the first playoff team without a field goal made in the first 7 minutes since 2009. Haralabob had something on their long two rate that was at 28%. Their season average was 14%. So this was going to register at one point. And I don't know what the final numbers were on the long two rate, but this is going to register as the second highest long two rate they had had. Now, if you look at the shot chart in the first quarter for Miami, there's actually about seven or eight shots that are kind of restricted area, which I know the NBA, the way they track it, they find restricted area in, but like just outside of the restricted area, Miami didn't make any of those either. They didn't make anything. They didn't make anything. The Heat starting five scored 18 points total in game four. It's the fewest by a starting five in a playoff game since it was first tracked in 1971. So it's the worst starting five production in a playoff game since 71, and likely before that. That's just the first year they kept track of this stuff. Here's another stat from Sean Grady, voice of the Celtics on radio. The Celtics have 12 total losses since mid-January. Their record after that, they're 11-1 with a scoring differential of 17 points. But really what you should do is say it's 11-0 because the loss was against Toronto when they had four starters out. So the 11-1 numbers, taking out the Toronto game, Boston's winning the game after the loss by almost 19 points. These numbers are like, they're as bad as they are for Miami. Boston's had a tendency here to answer, and Tatum's been one of those guys as well. Tatum now is fourth in playoff scoring, and as bad as he was in game three, and he was bad, and we saw how bad he was in the middle of the series against Milwaukee, this is kind of what he does, and I think what a lot of the guys do that aren't Luka, aren't Steph, aren't Giannis, because I still wouldn't put Tatum necessarily in that category. I have another stat for you that speaks more to the margin of victory. In general, over the last 17 playoff games, I saw this on Twitter. I don't know who had it. Sorry, a million guys had it. The last 17 playoff games, the margin of victory has been about 20 points, so 19.8. There's been a total in 17 playoff games, seven clutch minutes played. Seven clutch minutes played in the last 17 playoff games. So there could be a bigger topic here about what's going on and what all this means, and does the NBA need to fix it? You know, I will argue all the time, you know, sometimes something just happens. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a thing. Maybe this is just a really weird historical thing where there are these swings left and right that we can't really explain. Golden State, who's probably everybody's favorite right now to win an NBA title, is up 3-0 on a Dallas team that we weren't sure about. Felt good about after a miraculous Phoenix win, but Golden State was down 55 points at Memphis in their last playoff loss. They've won four straight since then. So you're like, wait, is an NBA title team going to lose by 55 points against Memphis without Ja? Is that the profile of an NBA champ? That didn't make a ton of sense. So as I've said throughout, and I certainly can with this series, you know, when someone wins, I can talk myself into it. And when someone loses, I can talk myself out of it, right? When Phoenix is rolling, you're like, look at all this depth. Look at all the guys they have, all these different options. They have size everywhere. They have Bridges defensively. They have Booker, who plays well off of Paul. Paul knows when to go and when not to go. Ayton is a big that you can keep on the floor to close the game. And instead, you're like, yeah, Bridges didn't really do a ton of offense on his own. Booker missed a million shots. Paul fell apart at the end of it. Do you really want to re-sign Ayton? You know, that's how quickly the conversation changes. It's the same thing with Golden State. Off the Memphis series, you're like, why was it six games without Ja? You know, what's going on with Clay? Is Draymond just going to be ignored so much by Dallas defensively, he actually becomes more of a liability? Will Looney play in this matchup against a smaller team that wants to go small all the time? And Looney's been terrific, especially when you go back to looking at what Looney did in game two. It's the same thing with Boston in this series. I can do both sides of this. I could go, well, look, Marcus Smart didn't play in game one. They switched it to Pritchard a million times. He played 30 minutes. He comes back game two. That's the Celtics. That's what you expect to see. It's 1-1. I think, as I've said throughout, I think Boston's a better basketball team. And then game three happens and you go, wow, all right. You know, Miami's really tough. They're really tough. And they are. It's a bunch of really tough guys. They also might be a bunch of really tough guys that are hurt. I don't think Butler looks the same. He was a mess. Hero doesn't play, which for a team that needs offense, for a team that's biggest question mark about winning an NBA title is, will they have enough offense to carry them? And then you take Hero out of the mix, and then PJ Tucker apparently is dealing with something too. And then I start going, well, you know, Boston just handed them the basketball about half of those 25 turnovers, and they still got it to one. So why can't they come back and win this thing? And they didn't have Rob Williams. So yeah, after four games, I'm sitting here going, yeah, they turned it over a ton in game three. And even without Smart, they had Rob back, and that changes things with Bam. And they didn't, you know, whatever. I think Miami's hurting big time, and I would be surprised if they came back and won this series in the last three. But this is the story of what this series is. Another little note here. Speaking of guys being hurt, because everybody's kind of hurt, and it's Ty Lue's old line when they'd ask him about injury updates. He'd say, "Everybody's hurt. Everybody's playing." There's one last thing. It's what I talked about months ago about the high usage rate in the history in the playoffs and how bad it is. It's overwhelmingly bad. Not impossible, but overwhelmingly bad. The last 20 years, the top usage guys. The top six usage players in the playoffs right now, it's Luka, it's Giannis, it's Jokic, it's Mitchell, it's Durant, it's Ja. The top six, when Doncic gets eliminated here, are all going to be home. I'm not sure what Miami can do to be better, other than hope Boston turns it over a million times in game five and just shoots it poorly, and the energy will be there for the Heat. It's obviously not the same crowd as Boston. I don't know that anybody would debate that one at this point. Could they go small? Could they throw more Victor Oladipo at them? You know, they could try that. They tried to go small in some of the lineups, and I thought that Boston was just so big at one point. They just had all their big guys out there against the small lineup, and I thought there was a lot of rebounding issues that the Miami Heat had in that game. So we'll see what happens. But overall, the swings and the blowouts, and obviously from just a product standpoint, the lack of close last couple minutes, less reviews though. It's a little disappointing, but it's also, you know, it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain how teams can look so opposite in 48 hours. The playoffs are heating up, and you can make every game feel like game seven on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay each week. You get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel has so many ways to play, and best of all, when you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. Let's take a look at Game 4. All right, straight line on this one. Golden State's actually the dog in this, plus one. I think that's what everybody was going for in Game 3, thinking, all right, Golden State personality probably lay off the gas here a little bit. So it still kind of feels that way. There's a total on an over-under on threes made by Klay, 2.5. Starting to feel a little bit like Klay. Starting to feel like it a little bit. Let's go Andrew Wiggins. Under 14.5 is plus 174. So you've got that. And then there's a bunch of combined stuff on like Steph and Luka, and points and assists and everything like that. So take a look at some of that stuff in there as well. New to FanDuel? Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N. Once again, that's promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N. And if you already have an account, you're all set to bet. No sweat. Either way, you get up to $20 in free bets if your same game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. That's right. $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Must be 21 and older in select states. Refund issued as non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet, $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-800-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, PA, Virginia, or 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help. Michigan, 1-877-8-HOPE, New York, or text HOPE, New York, 467-369, New York. Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789, Tennessee, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net, West Virginia. This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwich is done right, can change your life.
I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com.
This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I didn't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options, protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. George Donald joins us now. We're going to talk some hoops with him, ESPN's coverage of the NBA playoffs, and of course, 710 ESPN, 4 to 7 every day with Cap. So Sedano and Cap. We scheduled this before game 4, just so everyone understands. This is not a, hey, let's get Sedano. The series is even. The plan was to just go, let's talk hoops in general. So game 3 happens, and then game 4 happens. I spent 10 minutes trying to figure it out. I'll just open the floor to you, Sedano. What do you think's going on in this series?
Yeah, I have no idea. This thing is the wildest thing we've ever seen. I mean, everyone saw the stat yesterday. The Heat, 18 points with the starters. Lowest of any starting group in 25 years. The previous low was 25 by the 2009 Spurs, which I believe the starting five of that group was Tony Parker, Matt Barner, Roger Mason, Tim Duncan, and I'm missing somebody. But nonetheless, it was a long time ago now. And the other crazy thing, Ryan, with this series is, yeah, everyone talks about like, the disparity at the end of games, right? You know, the 20 plus point wins for each team for the most part, or the leads that have been at least 20 points or more during each individual game outside of game 3, which was tied at the end as the Heat were trying to hold on. But the wildest stat I've seen of all is that there's only been 4 lead changes in the entire series through 4 games. That's the craziest thing. And if anything embodies what this series is, it's that stat.
I'll admit, like, I thought Boston was better because they had more options. I thought that they had more offensive options as well. And, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen, obviously. But when I started in the open, I go, I can talk myself into a path of how this is 2-2. And I still feel good as a Boston fan going, okay, no Smart in game 1, turned the ball over a million times and still made it a 1-point game in game 3, no Butler. But now it's not just the result of game 4. This Heat team with no Hero and maybe a diminished Butler. So give me your own timeline, Sedano, of how you felt about the series before it and where you're at now and kind of what you're talking yourself in and out of.
So at the beginning of the series, I picked Heat in 7. I felt that I thought we'd be exactly where we're at right now. I actually thought Boston was good enough, obviously, to win in Miami, and I felt Miami was good enough to win in Boston. So I was okay with whatever the result was going to be, and this is exactly where I thought we'd be. However, to your point, I believe that the diminished state of the Heat is something that's worrisome to me. Now, granted, they've done a fantastic job navigating this stuff throughout the entirety of the regular season and even the postseason. But with the games being every other day now, I think that creates a different set of challenges for them. Well, it's a testament to Spo, I think, and just I know everyone hates this word, but the culture that they've cultivated, right? Because you've got guys like Gabe Vincent and Max Strus contributing in a big way in the postseason and including in this series. So can they continue to do that? I mean, I'm not going to doubt them. I don't think it's likely, but I can't rule it out because they've just done this stuff over and over and over again. And every time somebody doubts them, they feel this collective thing of like, oh, we're going to stick it to everybody now because now everyone's burying us again. And it just works itself out in some way, shape, or form. Because that game three, man, that was the way they held on was basically them just their collective will to want to play defense at a ridiculous level. And for all the turnovers, people can say the Celtics were sloppy, but they forced a lot of those turnovers. That was really good defense. Like, I'm not saying that the Celtics weren't sloppy at least a little bit, but I felt like Miami definitely was the team that was the aggressor there defensively. So can they muster up another one of those? For what it's worth, Ryan, they think they're the better defensive team. I know that in the regular season that didn't bear itself out. It has more so in the postseason. But they believe they can win just based on their defense. That for all the talk about their lack of execution, which you and I have talked about in the past, in the half court on offense, they still believe that defensively they can grind this stuff out.
Yeah, it's weird because I know they want to grind, but at the same point, like when I look at the beginning of game three with Lowry and him pushing the basketball, and you're like, oh, okay. And it's just, you know, I mean, we know the recipe. If the other team's not making shots and turning it over, then you should get into your offense quicker because there's always some kind of advantage. If it doesn't happen, reset it and get going. And I thought that was like the most glaring thing, but it's also tied into all of this stuff, whether you're making shots or not. When you don't make any for 9 minutes, that's it. You know, the Derek White part of it, you know, maybe they weren't even thinking of him. And honestly, after the first quarter, he didn't really make any shots. So it wasn't like Derek White just dominated him for an entire game. I guess I was waiting for the run. So, you know, everybody's making their jokes and they're looking at the score and you're like, okay. But just like game three, I thought at some point, like the most alarming thing about game three for Boston was you close the first half with some semblance of a pulse. There's all this energy in the building for the third quarter. And then you look up and you're like, oh, you're still down 15. And they still made a run in the fourth quarter. So I was like, what does that mean? And I kept waiting for that Miami run. And again, I don't love this offense with all of their pieces. And then to not have Hero and what looked like a diminished Butler. If it's going to look like that again, the Heat can't win the series.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. If Jimmy Butler can't be 3 of 14, they're not winning very many games like that. And if you look at it, had a couple of these flare-ups with his knee. I don't know the specifics of the severity of the knee, but it's something he's had to manage all season, which is why he's missed as many games as he has. And every time he comes back, that first game has been pretty terrible. So, you know, but he's had more time off in those scenarios. There's not very much time here. So can he have that bounce back game? I think we just kind of need to wait and see. But the Hero thing concerns me because, yes, they've dealt with him having some injuries in the past. But even when he's been on the floor in this series, they've been at somewhat of a disadvantage. So that concerns me a little bit as well. In that game, to your point, I did feel like they would make at least a little bit of a push in game four, but they were really bad on uncontested shots. They shot 28% on uncontested shots. And that's not trying to take away from the Celtics, particularly Robert Williams and Al Horford, who were incredible last night. They were, I think Al was like 1 of 12 when he contested. They were 1 of 12 against him when he contested shots. And I think Robert Williams was like, I think they were 3 of 14, something like that. But so those guys were awesome. But there were opportunities for them to get back in that game, and they just didn't. But it's been the concern that I've had with them the entirety of the season heading into the postseason. And again, it's something you and I talked about the last time I was on the show with you. Was that the half-court offense, if there was one thing that was going to concern me That was the thing heading into the playoffs. But it wasn't a huge issue against Atlanta because, you know, I don't know, Atlanta wasn't all that good. Philly was a bit discombobulated. And the Celtics team is, you know, has been the best defense in the league this season. So this is a different beast for them to have to go against. But, you know, I'm just done ruling them out. I still think it could be a 7-game series. If Hero plays and Jimmy's back to being somewhat what we've seen from Jimmy in the past, I still think they can win game 5. And then I think at that point, it's a 7-game series.
Let me ask you about Bam. I love him. Okay. And we know he had a slow start in the series, and then game 3 was the Bam game. Is he somebody that's appreciated more when you watch him every night? Or is it perhaps a little bit less compared to the national guys that like go, oh, I love Bam. You know, I like to think I watch a lot of basketball.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Bam has this like slightly lower local ceiling than maybe the way people look at him nationally.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's the other way around. I think that people like you who watch games, you know, for the most part every night, I think people appreciate you because you know what he's capable of, right? And I think that you and Eric Spoelstra has been pushing this for a long time. Like, we wouldn't be as good as we are defensively, and you know, they're a top 4 team defensively without him. Like, he masks a lot of their deficiencies with particular players. Previous to this team, when Duncan Robinson was out there and Tyler Hero at times in big moments, he was the guy erasing all those mistakes when teams would hunt those guys particularly. And he still does some of that as Hero gets hunted individually. And, you know, obviously Duncan hasn't played as much, but he's the backbone of everything they do because out of all the guys at that position, he's one of the few that can literally guard all 5. We've kind of, it's become in vogue to say, oh yeah, that guy can guard all 5 positions, but can they guard all 5 positions well is the question. And there's very few of those, and he's certainly one of them. So I don't think people appreciate that. I don't think people appreciate how he initiates a ton of their offense, particularly at the elbow. You know, previous seasons, well, not even previous seasons, earlier in this season, you know, when Duncan was still playing a bunch, you know, their dribble handoff game was a big part of their offense. And without Duncan being in the lineup, that has hurt his offense a little bit because there was a lot of dives for him in those scenarios. Then when Lowry is out, there's someone who he had a really good connection with instantly getting himself involved in the offense, particularly as a lob threat. So they don't really just run offense for him. He is a guy who runs offense for everyone else, right? Like, and I think that that kind of weirds people out, people that don't understand the game to a certain degree or that just watch it casually don't get how much of an initiator he is on offense. They just know he's really good at defense, and they just feel like, well, he needs to be more aggressive. And yes, that's true too, but also the way they set up their offense, he's a facilitator in a lot of ways, and he'll get it back depending on who's on the floor with him. So I just think it's, you're kind of one of the few people in the national media, Ryan, that understand his actual role within the concepts of the offense.
Real quick, though, I loved when you talked about the 1-5 because we are throwing it around way too much now with guys. We're like, oh, he can guard 1-5. You're like, wait, what? Like some guys I'll hear, like I was reading some recap of a game the other night, and I'm not going to say who the player is because then you're going to figure out who wrote it, and then I don't want to do that to the guy. And I was just like, why would you say this? And by the way, but the counter to that could be, well, guarding 1-5 isn't really that hard anymore because it's not like anybody's going to run their offense through the post. So you have these guards. Right. You don't have the Chauncey Billups at the block in the post fighting with a guy 6 inches bigger than him, which is what made Chauncey so great. Because nobody's going to just – nobody – they would think of it as like wasted possessions even with the size advantage. Okay, so let's – I had something else there with Miami and Spo. Can you kind of tell how Spo feels about a team year to year now? I mean, he's been there a long time. He is the best in the league. He's had different versions of this. And you always are like, wait, you got to take this team seriously. There have been years where I looked at the roster. I was like, come on. And then I look up and like, look at this. Look at this. They're going to make the playoffs again this year. He's the best. So I wonder if you have had, and again, I know you're not there locally, like covering the Heat every single night, but do you get a kind of sense? Like, I just thought he was so funny in the sideline thing where he's like, we're a little disconnected. You know, he was kind of laughing almost at how absurd it was, which I kind of love about his attitude. Like, other coaches couldn't pull that off. If he were a new guy laughing about how bad his team was in game four of the Eastern Conference Finals, he'd be like, what's up with this guy? But what else can you do at that point? It was so absurd. It was so bad. Give me anything that you can share with us about Spo and how he navigates this kind of stuff.
You know what, Ryan? I mean, you remember this. I mean, you know, he came into the league, right? His first couple of years, you know, he had Dwayne, obviously, who he had a great connection with, you know, because Spo, people talk about the video coordinator stuff, but what they don't know about Spo, or doesn't get spoken enough about Spo, is that he was one of their best player development guys, right? Like, everyone talks about the video room, but when Dwayne Wade first came into this league, he was obviously an incredible athlete, could get to the rim with ease, and was a very good defender. But he didn't have much of a jump shot. And the guy that worked with him on creating, particularly the mid-range stuff, which is what really opened up his game in a lot of ways, was Eric. And Spo was their player development guy for a long time when he was an assistant. So he kind of carried some of that stuff over the years. Like, and he has still done a lot of that, even though he's the head coach, right? Like, he has a lot of input on the way they develop guys. So when they get these kind of diamonds in the rough, kind of collaborates with the scouting group and Adam Simon and Chip Kammerer, and then you know, EA, their player development guy, and he's very involved when it comes to that stuff. So I think that the combination of that, right, his background being that being a big part of his background that people don't discuss a lot, and the fact that, you know, then in year three, he's dealing with this LeBron, Wade, Bosh team and all the scrutiny that those guys had to deal with. He's kind of seen it all at this point. Like, there's nothing that he's going to encounter that is going to be wilder than anything he's already encountered. Okay. From dealing to the highs and lows of that LeBron, Wade, Bosh team to dealing with making the playoffs after starting whatever it was, 9-31 one year with Deion Waiters and Goran Dragic as his best players and dragging them to 41-41 and actually just missing the playoffs that year, like by a tiebreaker scenario. So, like, he's just been through all this stuff. I've always kind of said to people more recently that, you know, he's kind of at the peak of his powers, right? Like, he knows how good he is. He's seen it all. He's done it all. And he's going to maximize every group that he's had. And he's been doing that for a long time. But now, you know, this year, I feel like, considering all the injuries they dealt with through the regular season, being the number one seed, right, holding the teams off, dealing with the stuff he dealt with Jimmy, towards the end of the season in that Golden State game, I just think he is so good at just staying even that, yeah, he doesn't take it. He doesn't, like, take everything so seriously that it frustrates him. He doesn't get frustrated very much. He's like the boxer who you can just – he'll take you the distance every single round or every single fight because he's just good at it. He's like Floyd Mayweather, right, in that scenario where, you know, it may not be the prettiest thing in the world. It may even seem boring at times. But he's going to get you to the end of that fight and he's going to have a chance to win that fight because he knows how to just kind of poke you and poke you and poke you and just, like, literally, you know, body blows and just wear you down. So that's just kind of where he is at this stage of his career. He's seen it all. He's done it all. He's great at the player development stuff. He knows what guys' ceilings are. He knows what guys' floors are. And he kind of kind of adjusts his rotations from game to game or even from season to season accordingly because of all that stuff.
You're doing the Western Conference Finals as well. Are you surprised Golden State's up 3-0 on Dallas?
I am. Only because, look, I thought they'd win the series, but only because of the way it went down in game two and game three, for that matter. So, game two, I mean, I was like, I kind of thought they had a chance when Steph and Klay had played so poorly, Dallas, that is, that Steph and Klay played so poorly And I was like, yo, Dallas is only up 9. And I'm like, I feel like this is a little bit of a missed opportunity here. And then we saw the Avalanche come. So I really felt Dallas let that one slip. And then in game three, it just felt like they were out of sorts completely. And, you know, Luka was good, but they're making him work in a way that no one had made him work previous to this series. Even Phoenix. Basically, what Kerr's done is they've said to Andrew Wiggins, you're guarding him, you're picking him up beyond half court. Sometimes we're going to have you pick him up full court. And it's not that, again, that Luka's not being efficient even in this series, but they're making them get into their offense really late. So the average time when Luka brings up the ball across his half court and he actually passes the ball, Ryan, is 9 seconds, almost 10 seconds into the play clock. So now you're talking about 15, 14 seconds on the clock, and they're just getting into their offensive set. And that's really screwed Dallas up in a big, big way. So they need to figure out how to get the ball out of Luka's hands quicker, maybe get it to Brunson or Dinwiddie or whoever else is going to be on the floor with him, and then get it back to Luka so then he can run the offense, because they're wasting a ton of time through three games. And that adjustment has yet to be made by Jason Kidd, even though I think Kidd has done a decent job in this series with some of the stuff that he's done, like he's closed off the paint a little bit on defense. But the offensive part, to me, I'm surprised that they haven't been able to overcome that, how late they're getting into their offensive set.
Because you've been around them, you know, a bunch now doing the NBA stuff for ESPN, give me a sense of like how Golden State sees themselves. I know the easy answer would be like, hey, they won titles before. It's still the three guys that are there, and it's Kerr, and it's the same thing. I got to imagine there's some part of it that's a little different. And then also compare that kind of what Dallas was like coming in after that Phoenix win. It's like, hey, nobody believed in us. We had this upset, and now they're down. Like, give me a sense just being around them all the time of the personalities of two teams at this point.
So let's start with Golden State. So I had a long conversation with Steph after game one, and I just kind of asked him, like, you know, obviously the last 2 years had to suck. So like, are you guys just enjoying kind of being here? You know, where it felt like it was a given for so long. And he totally went into this conversation about how much patience they've had to have, obviously the injuries, and then developing some of the they have in the rotation, right? Having some patience with some of the young guys, having patience with, I mentioned the injuries, right? But just Clay and him trying to be Clay again. Even a guy like Kevon Looney, who in the last run was a young guy, you know, he played a little bit, but now he's like an integral part of what they do. And he saved them in game two. I mean, Draymond went down with 5 fouls with 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. Kevon Looney goes nuts in that quarter, has 11 points. They were 0 of 6, the Mavs were, with him as the primary defender. He was forcing turnovers. I mean, he was fantastic, had 21 and 11. It was the first time he had a 20-point game in his career. He hadn't had a 20-point game since he was a freshman at UCLA. So, I mean, this is just to them, like, them realizing that, hey, we're getting older. We should appreciate this stuff more. It's not a given by any stretch of the imagination. And them understanding the patience of their player development, whether it's Looney, whether it's Poole, even guys that just kind of sub in and out briefly, right? Like even a Damian Lee who was playing the other day, didn't play all that great. But again, they've had to rely on a lot of different guys. And there was questions about whether those guys were reliable. And you're seeing now, particularly with Poole and Looney, that they have been reliable. So I think that it was a lot of that, right? Like just kind of understanding the moment, not taking it for granted. And then with Dallas, it was that. It was this defiance of, we weren't supposed to be here. None of you picked us to be here. And, you know, we're going to make the most of it. And it was weird because I saw Jason Kidd's comments after game three. And I wasn't there to see it, Ryan. That defiance almost came across like, to me, like waving the white flag a little bit, like understanding we're not going to win the series without having seen the way he said it, right? Because I don't have that kind of context. I'm just looking at the words. But it feels like it has morphed from the defiance of, we're here, we belong here, you didn't pick us, to, oh yeah, maybe we're not ready for this stage yet, but we're going to enjoy being at this stage.
Thanks, man. Enjoy game 4, and I'm sure we'll check in again soon.
All right, brother. Take care. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
What's up, boys? Sorry about the basketball earlier. I feel like we all needed to catch up. So Rudy was off. I forgot that he wasn't even on the Sunday night pod. I asked him to jump in about an hour in. They were like, hey, idiot, he's not even here today.
I cut that out. Don't worry about it.
Oh, you cut it out?
All right. I cut that out for you.
So Rudy came coming off a bachelor party, then right into grown-up stuff. I called Sir Rudy while he was at the bachelor party because I was at the combine. I had a really good story. I actually think it's a good story. Sir Rudy would back that up. Can't share it with everybody. But I didn't want you to pick up. And I was kind of glad you didn't. So that's on me. And there's no one else. I just got to look in the mirror and blame myself for that one. No one else I can blame.
A couple things that happened. One, I wanted to try to hop on Thursday when we got there. I was like a couple drinks in, just getting home from the Windjammer. Everybody wasn't in yet, but I heard some technical issues.
Where was the location again? South Carolina?
Yeah, we were in Charleston, which is a great spot, right on Isle of Palms. And it was beautiful. And it was first day we were there, had a couple drinks, and I was ready to talk about why I think Chet Holmgren should be the first pick in the draft. But I guess there was some technical difficulties. So maybe we'll do that at a later date. But you did call me twice and you sent me a text. And I remember seeing them, but I wasn't really in a position to pick either of them up. First, you called me, I think, when they were in the middle of playing 21 Cup. So that wasn't great. And then you also called me. Luckily, it was on silent during the reception of the wedding I had to go to on Sunday.
Ouch.
So not great timing for Ryan, but I did hit you back and I got the story and it was a good story.
You called me back on Sunday, so that's why I thought I was in the clear. I didn't know we were at a Sunday wedding. So you went bachelor party, Carolina, back to the Northeast for a Sunday wedding?
Yeah, I would not recommend. So I flew, 6 a.m. flight on Thursday. I think I probably got, the bachelor himself, I think, got about 4 hours of sleep in 3 nights. And they're all younger, dude. They're younger than me, so they get after a little bit harder. So I was trying to keep up, which is I would highly not recommend that either. But so after
a weekend of that,
would definitely not recommend. After a weekend of that, flew to Boston to go to my college roommate's wedding, which was fun. But I looked horrible. And I was seeing a bunch of guys and people that I hadn't seen in years. And I'm like, wow, they probably think I'm just like, something's going on in my life here. I've hit a rough spot because my eyes were bloodshot and whatever. But we had a good time, made it back, got some sleep, and I'm feeling all right. Tested negative for COVID. So here we go, ready to go.
Yeah, he didn't sound great Monday. I think we spoke briefly. I was like, I could tell something's wrong with this guy.
My voice is like, still messed up.
Yeah, it was like the Van Gundy flu game for game 4.
Yeah, I mean, I toughed it out. Like, you know, I put in the effort. That's all we can say. But we've survived. We're back. And, it was in a good spot for Kyle. These are Kyle's people. Like, they were salt of the earth guys. I don't know. There was a lot of golf. So I don't know if you're a golf guy. Russillo. Actually, I was telling the story, Ryan, about how much like you hate talking about golf. And the guys love that. They absolutely love that because some of the guys, it's like a weird basketball party situation where like half of them are really into golf and the other half just do not give a fuck about it. So it was like kind of like totally different vibes. And when I told them that, they were excited. But
golf. Yeah, I like golf, but I thought every interview where people would be like, hey, man, you hit them long, hit them straight. You know, you just be like fucking sitting there watching the clock tick away. Like, you got 8 minutes with this guy who gives a shit about his drives.
Yeah.
And
hit
so
straight. Don't care.
Yeah. Hey, Scotty, you getting out at all? You getting out at all?
How's that four iron?
You know me. You still stealing strokes?
Better put it out.
Yeah. No, I'm just talking about like in the interviews. And Van Pelt would agree with me, by the way. He would agree that.
Yeah.
And then it became a thing where Van Pelt would start asking guys about their golf game. Hey, how are you hitting them? How are you hitting them? You know, get Tony Dorsett on. Like, yeah, let's make sure we get a Tony Dorsett. How are you hitting them in there? Anyway, the only reason we bring up Tony Dorsett is because when we were doing the Dallas Super Bowl, the Fort Worth location and the in a stairwell covered in urine, they were like, this is a great vantage point for you guys to do the show. We're like, what? And then Tony Dorsett showed up and he was like, what the fuck? You guys are at ESPN? What is this? anyway, I don't know. Talking out loud. Kyle, how are you doing? I feel like I just needed to check in with you guys because I don't know. Because Thursday was such a mess technically because I was in Chicago for the combine.
That was something, man.
Yeah, it was bad. Because when you go to the hotel and you're like, hey, is anyone else complaining about the internet? And the guy goes, well, she goes, yeah, there's a couple, you know, I was like, so it's an issue. Like, it's a real issue. And like, I can't do the podcast here.
Yeah, not a great start. I think 10 minutes before we had Barkley, he was like, I'm going to go yell at the manager and make him find something. It's like 10 minutes before he showed up. And I think I was alone with Barkley for 2 minutes. And it probably felt like 10 extra minutes because I was like, we'll just see if he comes back. I was like, I just kept saying it should be 30 seconds. So I think I said 30 seconds maybe 3-4 times. And then you showed up and I just let out a huge breath.
So I know. We don't have technical difficulties really ever. And for all the days to have it, because I was on the road. And normally, like whenever I have to do this from a hotel, it's never an issue. It's never been an issue. And then the guy starts saying, I can have a guy come up, maybe reset it for it. I was like, all right, I've played that game before. Like, I'm not trying to play Mike Tyson punch out here. I'm trying to interview Charles Barkley.
I'm nowhere near old enough for you to tell me just redo it. Like, just restart it. I'm not 75, guy. I know when it's working. I know when it's not working. We're not pushing the reset button on this thing.
And so then he goes, you could just do it in the lobby. And I'm like, you know, this is actually, I know everybody has a podcast. People actually listen to this one. So I can't just do it in the lobby. I can't just do it in the lobby and just be waving at people while I'm interviewing somebody. And then finally some guy like got me upstairs and we only dropped it twice. But after that, I was like, I don't think I can check into that hotel again because I had to do the deal with Bill. I actually did an adult. I spent the night in Lake Forest, Illinois. Beautiful little town. It actually has a small school, 1500 admission, apparently D3 sports, 23 varsity sports. Incredible little setup. Did a little plunge, jumped in the water, 53 degrees Sunday morning. That'll wake
sounds
you up.
Sounds like Potsdam.
Nice.
Sounds real cool.
Real estate might be a little more expensive than Potsdam. Just guessing.
Well, some areas. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so I don't really have a ton more interesting on that. We just needed the whole group to check in.
How was your trip back? I heard, came back yesterday, right? I heard you had a rough flight in.
Bad flight in, yeah. Once again, when people complain about Delta, I just assume you don't travel that much. Because I was not on Delta this week, and I'm not going to say what I was on. Delta is the best. It's not close. I don't know why anyone would argue with me about this. As somebody that had to fly in and out of Connecticut, and it was always connections the entire time. Airlines make mistakes. They all do. Delta makes far less than everybody else does. So when I see somebody on social media being like, oh, here we go again, I'm like, well, then you don't fly the other airline. So I had to do a different airline. We crashed basically when we landed. We crashed. Like, it was so hard that people were free. Like, you ever hit the tarmac or runway, whatever? You ever hit it hard and go, whoa, this was a jolting, screaming experience.
Did you hit and go back up?
Yeah, bounced up.
Nice. Were you scared?
No, I was pissed because I hurt my leg.
That's the most Ryan thing ever.
Going to be recovering from this for a while now. Yeah.
Right. And then you're kind of thinking, like, is the pilot going to say anything to us on the way out? Because we'd already been delayed. We were circling forever. It was a 3.5-hour flight. It took six, from sitting down there, it was 6 hours until I got out of the seat after we crashed.
That'd drive me
nuts. I don't think the pilot even got out to say anything to anybody because you're kind of hoping, like, can I just look at you at the end of this and just go, hey, that was can you give us some acknowledgement that was a fucking disaster on the way in? Just something. Just let me know that you feel something inside.
Just a quick, my bad. That's it.
Yeah. That's all. I just want to look at you and go, because the pilots have a tough gig, but I did this rant before about how as soon as a guy says, oh, we're just double checking the logbook, should be 5-10 minutes. Crack open your churn out because you're going to be there an hour. All right.
Well, that was like Kyle telling Charles Barkley.
That's the Barkley.
30 seconds.
30 seconds. Yes.
So you just know And there has to be some psychological thing that they've done where they go, if you tell everyone, hey, we're going to be here an hour, it's way worse for the you know, flight attendants. It's just way worse for vibes, I think, if you go, hey, it's going to be an hour, probably going to suck.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just incrementally lie and keep going, hey, 5-10 minutes, I don't know where this logbook is, you know, they said that we'd be good to go. We're ready to go. You know, there has to be some psychological thing behind it. We're idiots. And
can't handle the truth situation.
Yes.
People just can't handle the truth. That's what it is. If you tell them an hour, they're going to freak out and start making phone calls. Social media starts blowing up. Big Cat gets on the case. If you tell them 5 minutes, then they kind of, all right, I'll get on my phone for 5 minutes. They don't realize 15 minutes has passed. Like, that's kind of how it works.
I would rather be told the truth once than lied to 5 times in increments. All right. This is not a pay as you go. This is not karma or whatever it is. Like, you know, I want the bad news now. All right.
Remember that ad we read a year ago. Nice. Nice job.
Did I even say it right? I think I forgot.
No, you nailed it. You fucking nailed it.
So anyway,
that's a great point though. If you're like, if you go bad news, good news, like who goes good news first? That's insanity. You always give me the bad news. Like, what's the worst thing? I'll prepare. I'll deal with it.
It doesn't change anything. Like, I'm in this seat for an hour, no matter what you say. So just tell me. And that way I can kind of adjust. Maybe it's a working out mentality of like, how many more do I have? I don't just go one and then say one again. So I only one time said anything, and it was out of Detroit, snowstorm, 2 hours, you know, hey, we're de-icing. Oh, I can't believe they didn't de-ice. Oh, I guess they did it, you know, and it on and on and on and on and on. And it took forever. And I just, on the way out, I go, hey, as everybody's like high fiving the pilot, like it just hit the game winner. And you're just going, and I stopped because it wasn't a huge line. It was like the end going, not many people were going to Hartford. It's Sunday night at midnight.
Fair.
And I go, why can't you just say, hey, we're going to be here a couple hours?
Yeah.
He was like, what? He gave me some of that. And I was like, no. And then I did. I brought this up before on the radio. It didn't go over well with the flight community. You know, people like, oh, the job is hard. You don't get it. I'm like, I know the job is hard.
Yeah.
I know that I'm not flying the plane. I'm just saying overall, the industry needs to ask themselves serious questions about, do we really think we're making it better for people by just saying, hey, it's going to be 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 or 6 times. Just fucking say, hey, we don't know. It's kind of suck.
The other thing too, and this is probably going to piss the flight community off, but isn't really the only job of, again, this is going to come off really wrong, isn't taking off and landing like kind of the only variable there? Like once the plane's in the air, like the pilots, it's kind of on autopilot, isn't
it?
I can't believe you just said that. I cannot believe you just did that.
All right, hit up my Twitter, my bad.
Shit. Rudy's going to be writing into Life Advice next week. I can't get out.
I took a day off. I'm hot.
I can't book any flights. I'm going to miss my next wedding.
Yeah, I'm not endorsing that last part. This would be a classic NBA thing. I'm as pro pilot as anybody.
Yeah. But does that mean I have to be anti-passenger?
Yeah. Does that mean? That's great. That was even better, Kyle.
Thanks. I've been paying attention.
All right, let's get some life advice in here. LifeAdviceR@gmail.com. Life advice dating app. I don't know. This address, was this person trying to be so tough to detect? Yeah, I think so. That it's like, this is like a fake password for Apple. When Apple's like, hey, do you want to try this password? And be like, hey, do you want me to never, ever fucking remember anything the rest of my life? Like, what kind of password suggestion is that? All right. Dear podcast people, my boyfriend that he listens to. Okay, so I'm always excited to hear stories he's heard during your life advice segment. For the most part, we typically agree with the points being made. However, I do always joke you need a woman's perspective on your show. Just saying. We had Nikki Glaser on, and she tore the top off of whatever kind of stuff we needed. All right, with that said, we'd like to hear your thoughts on a disagreement we've occasionally had over the last several months. We met on a dating app almost a year ago. Long story short, we met, enjoyed each other's company, and within a couple of weeks, officially in a relationship. A relatively more advanced user of dating apps who knew how to properly delete my account. My boyfriend, on the other hand, a novice of dating apps. I'm the second person he's ever met on one. Lucky SOB. Did not. He snoozed his profile. You guys know what this is? Snoozing a profile?
I think it's just you delete it off your phone. You don't do anything with it. I think. Right? Okay.
Sounds like it.
I don't think there's a snooze button. I think it's just you delete yourself off your phone.
don't feel like hooking up this weekend. Just 24-hour snooze. All right. He snoozed his profile and deleted the app from his phone. Oh, so I think it might be more, I think it's something you do with the app and then take it off. For those who don't know, this does not actually delete your profile. I understand this part. Although your profile will become inactive and users won't see it come up as an option, previous matches still have that visibility. I don't love the idea of my boyfriend essentially having a dating profile, albeit inactive. In his eyes, it's not on his phone, so he doesn't have one. In mine, there are people, even if only a small number, that still have access to his quote, unquote profile. He personally thinks it's too much of a hassle to re-download and log in just to delete it. I understand his side of things, which is why I don't push it, but every now and then it'll come up and I tease him about still having one. Now we come to you. Am I being unreasonable for wanting to take 5 minutes of his day to properly delete it, or should I just drop it? Since neither of us have strong opinions on the matter. It sounds like you have
a stronger opinion.
Just emailing into a show.
Yeah, right. Let me bang out a few paragraphs on something I don't care about. We agreed if the story made it on the show, we follow whatever advice was given. So we leave it in your hands.
Perfect. I'm going to save you guys a ton of problems here. Just sit down with her pal and just delete it. Watch her. We'll be like, do it. And then you know, she'll be like, oh, yeah, sorry, that was kind of dumb, huh? It's fine. It's great. Just do it. Then she won't ever think about it again. That's it.
Suri?
I agree. It's 5 minutes. I mean, clearly, here's the thing. I don't think it matters. I wouldn't care, but it clearly matters to her. So just delete it. It's not that big of a deal. How did they say how long they've been dating?
I thought they said a year.
If it's a year is a long time. If it was like a couple of months, you're like, hey, delete your app. Like,
I don't think it's a year.
Like putting the cart ahead of the horse a little bit. But
I totally made that up.
Yeah, you made that up.
All right.
Yeah. So all right. Well, but even if it is like hypothetically, if it's like a year or more, you know, if it's only a couple months, you're like, hey, delete your apps. All right, you're being a little pushy. But if it's been a while and you guys are kind of like figuring out what your long-term future is, I don't think it's unreasonable to want him to do it, even though I don't think it's a huge deal. But from the guy's perspective, who could just get rid of it?
Yeah, pal, if it all falls down, you can start it up again in five seconds.
A new one.
Yeah, with a better bio even. You know, maybe you'll do it better this time. But yeah, just do it. Make it easy on her and yourself.
I was dating somebody and I still had Facebook then, and I had a couple of people chiming in back when your boy was in the heat zone, and she was like, well, what's this? I was like, well, I can't really control that. You know, like somebody from my past says something flirty, you know, like it's my wall, but I'm not like in charge of who says stuff. So
is that exactly what you said?
Yeah, so I was like, all right, well, fuck this. I was like, I'm not dealing with this. I don't even like this. But I was addicted to this stupid college campus video game to like build your campus and add a stadium. Yes. And upgrade the video boards. And I was determined to not ever pay for any of the upgrades. It's just basically all these games exist because kids just fucking buy stuff. Yes. And you're like, man, like, look at our revenue. And you're like, yeah, did you ask the dad yet about his credit card bill?
Yeah.
This kid keeps racking up for coins to upgrade the landscaping in some fake campus.
Battle points. So, yeah. Well, let's see.
Right. Because I was traveling so much and I'd just be screwing around my laptop. I was like, all right, let me see if the kids like the movie theater upgrades I've made. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to do a standard fake, you know, account. But I had to log into it just to get the video game stuff back. And then the girl I was dating like 6 months later went to log into her Facebook. And then it came up and she's like, oh, my God. And I felt like such a loser. And I said I was doing it to stay in touch with somebody internationally. And really, I didn't want to admit I'm actually addicted to this stupid fucking campus
this
game.
This mobile game. It was a mobile game, right?
Yeah. Well, no, back then, dude,
it was like Farmville,
straight up desktop. It wasn't Farmville.
I think I remember the college game. It's like it was like Sims, kind of, right?
But it was awful because you would just have like if you didn't. I would have rather just bought the game for $50 and played something, and instead it was, oh, I'll wait around 2 days to see if the approval rating. Anyway, I gotta shut the fuck up. Stop talking about the whole point. The thing is girls don't like this stuff, man. They don't. Women, sorry. So I agree with the emailer here. Like, why would you want to keep dealing with this shit if it takes you 5 minutes to solve the problem? I don't think you need to keep giving them shit about it. All right. So I'll back up the guy here a little, but I think we're a consensus call here that the effort to put in to removing the amount of times this will keep, because clearly this is going to keep coming up. I don't think this is just going to be a go away thing. So just get rid of it. Get rid of it for real. It doesn't matter. So we agree with the emailer here, but take it easy on him a little bit. All right. Okay. Am I making a bigger deal out of something and should I expect an apology? 6'2", pushing three bills. Peloton 5 days a week, though. Nice. All right. Great output, man. Incident over the week. My wife had her best friend from high school visit this past week. Let's call her Ashley. She was the maid of honor, but I wouldn't say they're still BFFs anymore outside of shared history. Her parents also came along, as both families are friends. Not a full house because visiting parents stay with my in-laws and we could just get together for activities and dinner. Both dads are bigger guys, as obviously I am. Everything up to this point has been a good time. And this is also in the context of my wife has friends I don't like visit. I typically just sit in the chair and watch sports and am not as engaging when she has friends visit. I do like. In other words, Ashley is typically on the good friend side in my book. All right. So our guy engages. So we're out to dinner wrapping up. It's my mother-in-law's birthday, so we need to go back to their house for the cake gifts. We're about a five-minute car ride away. There are seven of us. Ashley's mom is not drinking, so she can drive. We have one car on the premises, a Maserati SUV, which is an SUV but runs small. Yeah, that does run small. As we're coordinating our departure, I mentioned three times, why doesn't one group go in the car and the other catch an Uber? It'll cost us maybe $7 and at worst a 15-minute delay. I get overruled by everybody. And we think it's a good idea to stuff everyone in the car. The driver, three overweight guys, my mother-in-law on the lap of one person, my wife tucked away in the trunk like we were 16-year-olds sneaking into the drive-in movie theater. All right, so the Maserati SUV, can we pull one of those up, Saruti? It's not a trunk, right? It's just the cargo area in the back.
It's like a hatchback, right?
Yeah, I think. Because a trunk's a whole different deal. You get thrown in a trunk. You guys ever been thrown in a trunk?
Yeah, I think it was more of like fucking around with your kids, but yeah.
Yeah, Saruti.
Right in there.
Yeah, I've been in the truck. I've been driven in the bed of a pickup truck before, which was
wow, that's kind of exhilarating. That's like that's doing it right. A pleasure.
Except when it's just open on the highway, right. But yeah.
As soon as the car starts.
It's not that huge. It's not massive, but it's, you know, you could fit back there.
But it isn't a trunk like closed off.
No. Right. It's not closed. Right. Yeah, there's windows and stuff.
Right.
The Levante.
As soon as the car starts, my wife starts complaining that it's hot and then starts saying she can't breathe. And she goes into crying that she can't breathe.
Oh, she's claustrophobic, is she?
I am sandwiched into this car where my leg is in my chest and my hand is pinned against my side so I can't reach the handle. But I start screaming at everyone to stop the car and get out now and help her. In my mind, when my wife is screaming, I can't breathe, it equals an emergency. And especially when no one else is reacting, the manners go out the window. This goes on for probably 30 to 60 seconds. Felt like an eternity. Car finally is parked and finally someone gets out of the car. We all pile out and my wife is fine. But I've got the adrenaline going at this point. I just start yelling. When I say stop the car, it's an emergency. Stop the car with some expletives mixed in.
Oh, shit. Ruining the day.
You went fucking crazy.
No, I like this, but keep going.
All right. All of a sudden, I'm now Mr. Overreaction.
Well, you guys are both. Perfect.
And original. Ashley, the maid of honor, no longer BFF Ashley, starts yelling at me that, quote, I can't talk to her mother that way, and gets high and mighty with me. I never said anything specific about or to her mother, more to the entire group. I don't know, man. If you started screaming, stop the fucking car.
Yeah, who's driving?
Yeah. All right. This continues throughout the night. Now I'm pissed. I am not. Respect me. This is my house and you're my guest guy. I've been historically willing to take an L on an argument when I'm in the right, just so the other person shuts up and we could turn to our pleasantries. But this time was just a bridge too far for me. I don't know if it was the seriousness of the situation. If from the start, I was the this is stupid, let's get an Uber guy, and it was still lingering. So the real question is, how hard should my feet be dug in on this one? I didn't kick anyone out of the house, but I've been a little less jovial throughout the week. We probably won't see Ashley in person again for 5 years. And this would be one of those things that are never spoken again. But I'm also a little exhausted of constantly being the voice of reason and then being crapped on for essentially being right. A lot going on there. All right. So we don't know. I have a lot of questions. I don't know if we're never going to get answers on these. If your wife is screaming, and this is not something she normally does, and she's freaking out, is the husband like, I can get you kind of losing your mind in there and going, hey, everybody else, like my priority is my wife. I don't care what else is going on here. So I don't know why no one listened to you. And of course, yes, you planted the seed that, like, why can't we just get the Uber? Everybody told us you were wrong. And then your wife screaming she can't breathe minutes later. So I can get why you were so upset about this. It sounds like you probably crossed the line, though, because you said there were some swears mixed in. And you're denying it with the, it wasn't, like, I didn't say F you to a specific name, but we all know exactly what you're talking about because they didn't stop the car. So you're talking about the driver, you're talking about the mother-in-law. So they clearly think you're a lunatic, even if I can understand your justification. But it's hard to kind of have any idea of, like, do you do this a lot? Do you get mad about things that you think, like, all right, I'm taking this too far? So we don't have the answers to any of this stuff. So I wouldn't say feel too bad about it. What I'd ask you is, who cares about the W in this? What's the win in this? Where is the win? Months later, hey, you know what? We should have got an Uber, bud. You know what? Like, there is no W here. So why do you care? What is it about it that's going to make you feel better? Unless you feel like everything's changed, but then you just admitted you're probably not going to see this woman again for 5 years. So this isn't like a neighbor you're interacting with. It's not like a coworker. It's not a sibling. So what really is the win for you in this? Somebody admitting that you were right about not being, I agree with you. I think all of us are going to agree with you. The small SUV, three guys pushing three bills.
Come on.
Women scattered all over the place.
That's insane.
Yeah. You were right, man. You were right. So maybe this is your win.
But deep down, they know it too.
Yeah. But in context of, like, what you're hanging on to, what you're hoping, what kind of resolution? It's probably never coming. And if you got it, what would it mean? It doesn't even mean anything.
This is probably going to go down as, like, a weird dinner event. I mean, I've got one. We've got one we talk about, you know.
What's yours?
And those people, I don't even think I could say it, pal. I don't think I could say it, but we all know it. Everyone who's involved, we all say
give
it.
Give me a sampling. Give me a hint.
It was just a rough dinner, and there's, like, a motion that people do because we were all there. And we're like, oh, that was weird. Like, you know, if you did something weird when you were saying, like, if you were, like, moving your arms when you were dropping F-bombs, like, that might be a thing that's like, oh, you don't want to pull a bill or something like that. Like, it might just be one of those...
Bill.
Well, I don't know if your name's Bill, pal. I'm just saying, you want to pull a Mark or something, you know? I don't know. I see what you're saying. No, Bill wasn't the subject of the story, but he was there. So all I'm going to say is you probably just became part of, like, one of those things that's going to be, you know, it's going to be infamous, and you can come back from it, but I don't know if you're going to be able to, that's never going to go away. It's probably going to be talked about when you're not there. I'm just really curious who got in the trunk now that your wife said that she was no longer eligible to be in the trunk. How'd you guys get home? Sounds like you pulled over 3 minutes away from the house, right? He's like, it was like 60 seconds in the car and then they got out. I don't really know how they got home. I'm wondering who got in the trunk.
Yeah, that's some good sleuth in there, Kyle. Who knows?
Just laid across, like, whoever was in the back seat or something? Or we just... Because, I mean, it sounded like there was no room to squish the fourth person in there if we've got a bunch of big guys. And the big problem is a big person couldn't have drove. If one of the big people drove, it would have been fine. But that's just not what happened. This could have been avoided a multitude of ways. But I'm done. That's all I got.
It's the only thing I'll say is there is a win here, though, Ryan. I think.
Oh, there is.
Right. I think it's the way that you defend your wife is important. Like, you know, like, you have her back in the situation. If you're the one that's like, I mean, it's like the chivalry is not dead thing. If no one's taking her seriously and she's freaking out in the back and you come up with a stern yell, even if there are a couple of expletives in there, that could go a long way in the relationship. Like, as a married guy, like, I don't think I would ever be in a situation like that necessarily. But I know my wife Maddie would appreciate me having her back in that situation. So, and she's the one that you see every day, and she's the one that's obviously your wife. So that's kind of the most important thing. Like, if you're in-laws or whatever, and you got a couple of friends that aren't super big fans of you anymore, that's one thing. But if your wife's like, hell yeah, I appreciate you having my back, then that's way more important. So I kind of think there is a win there. And if that's the way it went down, then you should feel good about yourself.
That's probably why I'm not married, because I just am so pragmatic about everything that I feel like I'd be like, no, hey, look, I know we're married. I know we have three kids. I love you to death. You're wrong. Kyle was right.
Hey, look.
She'd be like, wait, you're taking nephew Kyle's side? I'd be like, look, Kyle made a better argument. You made a bad argument. Like, you just didn't have the numbers on your side on that one. I'm sorry, but I can't. What, do you want me to lie to you? You want me to tell you that you did a good job when you didn't? You didn't. You didn't do a good job. Sorry. What's for dinner? Thanks to Kyle and Steve. As always, please subscribe to the Ryan Russillo Podcast, Ringer, Spotify. We'll talk to you Thursday.